First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
A new COVID variant has made its way to North America. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, what you need to know about the Omicron variant and also getting that booster shot. Have you done that yet? Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later, it's Giving Tuesday. Today, we'll tell you how you can maximize the impact of your dollars right here on the First Coast. All of that and more just ahead. But first this hour, a concern is growing about a new variant of COVID-19. The Omicron variant has been detected in North America after first showing up in South Africa. Health officials say it's a cause for concern, but not panic. Here's President Joe Biden on Monday.
This variant is a cause for concern, not a cause for panic. We have the best vaccine in the world, the best medicines, the best scientists, and we're learning more every single day. And we'll fight this variant with scientific and knowledgeable actions and speed, not chaos and confusion.
So what are your questions about the Omicron variant and whether it's come to our area yet, what we might expect? And have you gotten your booster shot? It's now recommended all adults 18 and over who have been vaccinated get boosted too. What about that? Let's get some answers now from Dr. Michelle Aquino. She's a hospitalist at Baptist Health in Jacksonville. Dr. Aquino, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Always happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And folks, already getting your calls as we talk about the new variant, the Omicron variant. Yes, we're going to go all the way through the Greek alphabet before we're done. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Okay, let's begin with this variant. What does the World Health Organization and the CDC say about any danger from Omicron?
It's saying right now we just need to be concerned. That's all it's saying. Because remember, we are being super cautious responding to this variant, which, by the way, just came out into the world on Friday. In other words, our consciousness on Friday. It was first found on the 9th of November, but this past Friday is when the announcement was made that it's in South Africa, it's spreading quite rapidly, and there should be concern. And then, you know, fast forward to today on Tuesday, and there is so much concern. And I think all we know right now is there's a new virus, and let's be cautious. That's all we know right now, to be honest.
So a lot more that we don't know than we do. How effective are our current measures against this variant, Dr. Aquino, getting vaccinated and wearing masks?
That's a million-dollar question, Melissa, and that's what we don't know. Again, there's a lot we don't know. What do we know? It seems to be highly transmissible. That's what we know, and that's all we know right now, and that's based on a very small number. Let me kind of give everyone the numbers here so you understand what we're talking about. When you look at South Africa, they had a Delta wave, and back in August of the 14th of August this year, they had something like 1,700 hospitalizations, right, in this area we're talking about. And then that decreased the way it has everywhere else in the world once you had your Delta peak, right? And their lowest numbers were on the 6th of this month. Well, on the 20th of this month in this area in Africa, they noticed their numbers started going up. And right now, their hospitalizations have increased 63% in the last 3 weeks. And those numbers sound terrible, but we're talking just under 600 people that have now been hospitalized since we found this virus. So we're extrapolating so much. This might happen. This might happen. This might happen. And right now, we really only know that it is highly transmissible in this area, and it's spreading throughout the world. That's what we know right now.
Right.
I really want everyone to understand that.
Sure.
We have no idea how the vaccines are going to work against it. We're trying to get that information as we speak. We're going to assume masks are going to help to a certain degree, as always, with any type of, you know, virus that's transmitted in a respiratory way. And that's all we know right now.
Wow.
That's all we know.
Okay. It's 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment. Health officials are now recommending everyone 18 and older get a booster shot if they've been fully vaccinated and it's been 6 months since they got their vaccine or vaccines. Again, the urge to get vaccinated as well. At the same time, Dr. Aquino, there's a new antiviral pill that the FDA may soon authorize, molnupiravir. It's made by Merck and Ridgeback Biotherapeutics. It would be the first oral home treatment available for mild to moderate COVID-19. How encouraging is this news?
It's encouraging for Delta and the previous COVID viruses that we've had, because we know that the studies that Merck has done has been against those viruses. So this pill is encouraging for that. But for the Omicron, we're not sure how effective it's going to be.
At the same time, the CEO of Moderna, I believe, has said he has doubts about how effective our current vaccine options might be against Omicron. That's kind of worrisome.
Right. And this is what happens. Anytime we get a new mutated virus that looks like it's spreading and it's going to hang around, like the Omicron, right? What we do is something called antibody neutralization studies. And what that means is in the lab, scientists take this new virus and they mix it up with, solutions that have the antibodies that we form from our vaccines. And what we want to see is if the antibodies neutralize this new virus, in other words, stop the virus, right? And so those studies are underway right now. We do not know what the results are yet. But of course, as soon as we know the results, then we'll know if our present vaccines are going to work against this virus, or do we need to be more concerned and start looking at other options for vaccinating against this virus.
We're coming into the holiday travel season. In fact, we're already in it. How concerned are you, Dr. Aquino, about the strain this could put on hospitals? You've been through a terrible time over at Baptist Health in the ICU. Right. Tell me how you're gearing up for, I guess, what we should expect is another wave of this.
Well, we've got to look at, this is one of those big picture, right? Right now, we know this virus is in Africa. It's in Asia. They found it in Hong Kong. They found it in Australia. It's in Europe. We now have found it in Canada. So really, it's just a matter of time before it starts popping up here in the United States and obviously Latin America. And so we have to wait and see over the next few weeks how prevalent it becomes within all these communities, number one. We have to see how many people actually get sick and hospitalized, because this virus can spread and it might be easily transmittable, but is it going to cause disease? That's what we need to know. Right now, like you said, do the vaccines we have now work against this? If they do, great. Then this is just something we're going to keep an eye on and not be overly concerned.
They might have to develop a new vaccine to match this variant, I'm hearing. Is that possible?
Right. Yes, absolutely. And this is one of those wonders of science. These mRNA vaccines, it's like they have the vaccine, and all they need is a new mRNA protein to put in the vaccine and duplicate vaccine. So if you see the Pfizer and the Moderna companies, what they're saying is it would take them roughly about 100 days from start to finish of making the vaccine and having it ready to ship out. So there is something in the future if this ends up being something that our vaccines are not working against, our present vaccines. So it looks like future vaccines will be something will be easily available. We need a few months, obviously, but it's something there. So that's a good thing. This is not a brand new, COVID virus that we see no treatments in sight. So that's good, and keep that in the back pocket. But one thing I want to stress is what you were mentioning, the holidays. You know, this virus is going to take time to get into the community, cause disease, cause hospitalizations, and cause deaths. Remember, this takes, we're talking weeks, months for this to happen. And so right now with our holidays, I don't think that this virus is going to cause any holiday peaks that we might have. So everyone needs to keep your eye on the ball, right? And that is future travel plans for everyone, Christmas, Thanksgiving. There is still a lot of Delta that can cause harm here in the United States. You know, right now, when you look at the United States, fully vaccinated Americans, we're at 61%. That's it. Here in Duval County, we're at 56% fully vaccinated people. All right. And that's 12 and up. So we need to remember, we have to be cautious now. We have to be cautious against Delta and not drop our guard. If you're traveling, wear your mask. If you're around people that you don't know if they're unvaccinated, if they are vaccinated, I should say, wear your mask. You need to be cautious. And remember, Delta is still here. Delta has not gone away. I want everyone to be cognizant of that.
That's a great reminder. Kelly tweets the show Marketplace on NPR is reporting markets are down based on the CEO of Moderna stating in the Financial Times that a new vaccine is likely. If you're just tuning in, I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect, and we're speaking with Dr. Michelle Aquino of Baptist Health about the latest COVID variant of concern, Omicron. What are your questions? Let's go to a few calls, 549-2937. Brian in Ortega. Hi, Brian. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning so much. Thank you so much for taking the call. My question quickly is Jacksonville, you know, here locally, are hospitals equipped to detect this new variant? You know, so if somebody's positive for COVID, they go to the hospital, you know, they're able to see, hey, this is the Delta variant. Are hospitals equipped?
Sure. Yeah. Like, which variant are they dealing with? That's a great question, Brian. Dr. Aquino, how do we test for this variant? Would a rapid or a PCR test be able to detect which variant of COVID someone has?
That's a great question, Brian. Glad you brought it up. So first of all, let's start with the first question. Can we detect this? Can we detect that you have COVID from this new virus? Yes. From South Africa, what we're hearing right now is the PCR tests are working to detect this virus. So that's a good thing. If you get exposed to this and you get COVID and you have the symptoms, we'll be able to test you and say, okay, you have COVID. Now, here's the trickier part, detecting which virus is causing COVID. Is it Omicron? Is it Delta? At this point, really the only people that test for a specific type of virus is the health department. The hospitals don't do that. It's usually the health department. And this is diffusely throughout the United States. The health departments are the ones that will get a certain amount of local COVID positive, results. And they will test all those results to see what percentage is Delta, what percentage could be a new virus. So I think this is just going forward. We're going to need to see it spread. And once it starts spreading and we see it in the United States, I think the health department is going to start then testing for it, which I'm sure we're doing now, by the way, because mm-hmm. we want to see if it's already here in the United States. So the short answer is the hospitals don't test for this. Usually it's the health department that tests for the type of specific virus you have from a COVID infection.
Tim in Neptune Beach. Hey, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, doctor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick question. Hopefully it'll be an easy one. But, doctor, I was listening to or watching another physician or scientist on the news, and they were talking about vaccines and boosters. And he mentioned almost kind of casually something that was surprising to me. And he just kind of said, maybe it's obvious to everybody else, but he kind of just said that these booster shots are not for Delta, that they're basically for last year's bug. And to me, I just hadn't heard that before. And I guess I'm just wondering, you know, is that true that they're not for the dominant strain? They're not for Delta, because you had just mentioned Delta.
Right.
And then B, you know, as a vaccinated person who's already, you know, got the vaccine for last year's bug. In short, why should I bother?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I do it? So I guess that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Tim. Okay, let's talk about the booster shot, doctor. By the way, full disclosure, I got mine last week. It was sort of like getting the second Moderna shot all over again. I felt kind of bad for a day, and that was it. but tell us more about the boosters and how they work and why people should get them.
All right, so right now, all our vaccines and our boosters are based on the initial COVID infections that first spread. Correct? Way back in March of 2020. And here's what happened. I spoke earlier a little bit about something called antibody neutralization. So anytime a new strain comes out, that is the first thing the pharmaceutical companies do. They check this new strain against the vaccines that we have now to make sure that our present vaccines are working. So in other words, when Delta was first coming out, this was done, and it showed that our vaccine worked against Delta. And so, end of story, that's great news. That means we just keep using the same vaccine. So with Omicron, Omicron, I honestly mispronounce this virus so often. I apologize.
I don't know how to say it either. I went with Omicron. So,
I know, and I'm Spanish, so I want to even pronounce it a third way, so it's interesting. But anyway, so this new virus, whatever new virus we have, again, they do that antibody neutralization test against the vaccines we have, vaccines and boosters that we have now. And so this Omicron is in the lab. It works. In other words, if our antibodies from this vaccine presently work against this virus, great. That means the vaccines we're using are working against this even newer virus, and we do not need to change anything. And so that is the key. So right now, remember, I don't want everyone to think, okay, we're done with Delta. Let's now start worrying about this one. No, we're not there. We're still dealing with Delta. We're still dealing with infections. If you look at, I want to say Michigan, I think New Mexico right now is having a huge spike. So there's still spikes going on throughout the United States with Delta. We can't forget about that one. And right now we know that our vaccines and our boosters are working very well up through Delta. Now, again, this new one, shortly, I'm imagining within the next few weeks, we're going to start seeing studies telling us if our present vaccines work against this one, this new one, or not. And so that's going to be interesting if that comes out.
Yeah, for sure.
If it works against the Omicron, great. We're doing well. Everyone keep getting vaccinated and boosted. If it doesn't work against our present vaccines, a whole another can of worms.
I can't even believe, after all the world has been through, that that's where we are. But unfortunately, because herd immunity has never been achieved, that allows the virus to keep mutating. So that's why this is happening, unfortunately, folks. Not enough people got vaccinated. Yeah. Let's go to Eric in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, before I make my point, I want to make something really make another point real quick that needs to be said. Throughout this whole pandemic, there have been two news outlets locally that have been responsible. This show in particular.
Well, thank you.
And you're welcome. And the PBS NewsHour, which comes on every night from 7 to 8.
Which I can't recommend enough. I adore Judy Woodruff and the PBS NewsHour. Thanks for that, Eric. Go ahead.
Okay. And then the point I wanted to make is I just feel like people who travel by airplane, I mean, we in this country think that we just have the God-given right, that God came down and said, hey, you're Americans, you can just travel wherever you want, whenever you want, for whatever you want, any way you want. And I just think that's just really irresponsible. I think the federal, the transmission system of this virus has been the airline corporations, the airline system. All the countries of the world need to get together in a class action lawsuit and sue Boeing and Southwest and all these other airlines out of existence. Because, and by the way, people, as an aside, to finish what I'm saying, people who travel by plane for business, there is nothing. I want someone to explain to me, what is it that you cannot do with a phone call or with a Zoom call or with a pen and the mail that you have to do in person? There's nothing. So all these business people that fly around all over the place and all these jet setters that think that they own the world basically are, I think, largely responsible for the spread of this virus, and we should sue the airlines out of existence. Thanks for taking my call.
Eric, thanks. You know what, Dr. Aquino, this is making headlines just this morning. Up in Canada, our neighbors to the north, if you're not vaccinated in Canada, you are barred from plane and train travel as of today. If you want to get on a train or a plane in Canada starting today, you have to show proof of vaccination. Do you believe our American carriers should do the same?
Well, first of all, thank you, Eric. I appreciate your passion. I will say two important things. Number one, the airlines are one of the few people that are requiring any type of mandated safety precautions. One of the few.
And they're kicking people off planes who aren't behaving themselves. Yeah.
Yes. You know, could we be stricter? Sure. Can we say in the United States, you cannot travel on a plane, on a bus, or any type of public transit unless you have an N95 mask? We could do that. That would be interesting, but I think that would be probably the safest way to make travel as safe as possible. Barring that, wearing masks is important, and I appreciate that the airlines are at least trying to make sure that's happening. The second thing I will say about jobs and traveling, I have no comment. Everyone has to do what they have to do. But this is something I need to bring up. The planes, yes, absolutely. How are we going to get a virus here from, you know, Botswana, South Africa, or wherever else it started from? Obviously, it's with travel. So I agree that travel restrictions need to be strict to keep us all safe. And that's the thing I want to stress. Whenever we put up restrictions, at least me from a medical point of view, I see it as another step to keep people safe. That's how I see them. I'm not seeing that you're restricting me and doing something I want. I see that you're trying to keep me safe from someone else. That's the way I see it. So I need to stress that. And the last thing I want to stress with this travel and international, you know, pandemic called COVID is something called vaccine equality. I know people have been hearing about this, and this is the issue with vaccine equality. Here in the United States, we are, you know, vaccinated, what, 61% fully vaccinated in the U.S. Some other countries are doing a little bit better than we are. But the point is, we richer countries are vaccinating our people. These poorer countries cannot vaccinate their people. They don't have vaccines. If you look at the South Africa area where this outbreak is happening, their vaccination rate, fully vaccinated adults, is 28%. So we need to also look at this vaccine equality and say, yeah, okay, we have all these
vaccinate the world, in other words.
Countries.
Yeah, vaccinate the world. Okay,
yes.
Before we go back to a few more calls, I want to get a few tweets on the air for you, Dr. Aquino. Julie tweets the show, I had a breakthrough Delta infection in October. I'm looking for a clear answer on when I should get boosted. I've heard 30 days and 90 days, and I'm hesitant. What should she do? She was vaccinated but still had a breakthrough infection in October. Can she get the booster now, or should she wait?
So you were fully vaccinated in October. Number one, I need to know if it's the Johnson & Johnson, or did you get an mRNA vaccine? So I would say if you were vaccinated, let's assume you were fully vaccinated, okay, and it's been greater than 6 months, and you got an mRNA vaccine, or it's greater than 2 months, and you got a Johnson & Johnson, and you had a breakthrough, I would say I would go get vaccinated, because this is what I know. I know that your immune system was weak enough for the virus to give you a breakthrough infection, number one. And so what do we know about boosters? And this is the big picture with boosters. Boosters is just a refresher to your immune system. That's all boosters are. And so you get your vaccine or you have a natural infection, okay? Either way, it's time to get boosted if you're due for it, all right? So I don't really wait. I don't recommend waiting the 90 days after an acute infection to get vaccinated. I say, listen, you got an infection, go get boosted, because that's just going to make your immune system even stronger.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's my recommendation.
Thank you for that. Robin tweets the show, I wear my mask as much as possible, especially when working with the public. And I know it works, but weren't we told that mask wearing protects others from our germs? That unless the person you're in contact with is wearing one, we're still susceptible to getting infected. That's a big concern for people that work in customer service or work in any capacity with the public. They're masked, but the customers aren't.
Right. Robin, that's a great question. And at the end of the day, masks help. Some of them are better than others. Obviously, N95 is the strongest. That's what I use as a doctor when I go into a room with a patient. I'm in there for 30 minutes sitting down talking to someone that has active COVID, okay? So N95 are the best. The next best are the surgical masks. The next best are the cloth masks. And the least protective are the gaiters, the ones that people just kind of pull over and then put on their neck when they take off. That's the way the strength of these masks work. But at the end of the day, wearing a mask is better than not wearing a mask. It will give you some protection. And the key is, if you wear a mask and someone that has COVID wears a mask, that person with COVID is not going to be able to spread the COVID as much in the air. And that really is the best protection, someone with COVID wearing a mask. And so you wearing a mask, if you do not have COVID, just gives you more protection. So again, it's just layer upon layer upon layer. Whenever in doubt, wear a mask.
We'll leave it there. Thanks for the advice and hope to have you back soon, Dr. Aquino, when we know more about this variant. Thanks so much, Dr. Michelle Aquino, Baptist Health. Have a great day.
Thanks,
and continue to do that great work. Much more still ahead later. We're going to continue our occasional dining series around town as we spotlight the new Haka Kitchen. But up next.
The idea is really to pool our effort to raise the profile around giving and giving back.
How you can add to the global spirit of giving right here at home on today's Giving Tuesday. That's next.
Remember when you started listening to public radio? A whole world opened up with all these different voices, and you were all ears. Hey, I'm Elsa Chang, and on this NPR station, there is always something, someone new to discover. That's possible thanks to listeners who donate. And now that you're in the know, if you've never given, become a new donor now. Here's how.
Visit wjct.org/givingtuesday.
That's right. Today is Giving Tuesday. And what it is the nonprofit sector's response to Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Now, this annual one-day global movement has grown a lot over the last decade, and it inspires hundreds of millions of people to give, collaborate, and celebrate generosity. In 2020, U.S. nonprofits alone raised more than $2.47 billion on Giving Tuesday. Maybe we can top that this year. For more about Giving Tuesday, I checked in with Mari Qureshi, president of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund. Hey, Mari, it's so good to be with you. Thanks for joining us on this Giving Tuesday.
Thank you, Melissa. Pleasure to be here.
Now, of course, you had the private foundation, the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund, doing a lot of giving. Before that, though, you co-founded a really interesting crowdfunding philanthropy site, Global Giving. So you know all about global giving, literally. So what are your thoughts about the importance of Giving Tuesday?
So Giving Tuesday is a relatively new phenomenon. It's coming up on its 10th year, but it's really a response to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and Tuesday was left, so we took it, and it is now Giving Tuesday. And the idea is really to pool our efforts to raise the profile around giving and giving back and volunteering and doing all of the things we do for each other. And this, of course, is perfect for hashtag Giving Tuesday. And therefore has become something of a global phenomenon. And it's really about leveraging our efforts to bring attention to all the things we do for each other and get energy around it, because it shouldn't all be about consumerism.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really heartening to see that in Duval County last year, people made nearly 40,000 donations to the tune of $5.6 million. That's a generous community. We love to see that. But there have also been challenges the pandemic brought to this movement. How has that been unfolding?
So I think the challenges that the pandemic brought were less around digital giving or Giving Tuesday, more that the needs in the community suddenly spiked. People lost jobs. People lost ways in which, you know, suddenly found everything had to be virtual. And if you weren't already set up, then, you know, you couldn't access basic services. You couldn't access education. So for all of those reasons, the pandemic created these incredible spikes of need. And nonprofits found themselves without a way of holding galas and fundraisers the way they traditionally did. So, you know, we as a private foundation tried to fill the gap, but we also really thought it was imperative to lead our grantees and other stakeholders in the nonprofit community towards a path towards becoming literate in digital fundraising, because digital fundraising is something you can do from home. So we just think that it's an important learning curve,
and that it is a perfect lesson to take away from the pandemic because it is something that we can put in our toolkit for general resilience outside of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has been incredible to watch nonprofits move to the digital Zoom space to keep their funds going. And so tell us a little bit about how you at the DuPont Fund are helping grantees with this whole endeavor.
So starting last year, we started a program available to all of our grantees and partners where we made available basic courses in how to engage in digital fundraising, because digital fundraising isn't just going online and asking for money. It's about establishing a brand. It's about establishing a voice. It's about coming up with the stories that move people to give and becoming digitally savvy about all of those things. So we created a program. We had 90 participants. We matched the donations they raised online, and they saw, you know, massive increases in the amounts of money that they were able to raise online. Our grantee partners raised $3 million. We matched it approximately to the tune of $2 million. And for some people, for some organizations, they saw a growth of 40% or more in the amounts of funds that they raised digitally. They got a huge jump in their Giving Tuesday donation levels. So all of these things are something that we're repeating again in 2021. And we have another cohort of grantees going through this program, again with a match. And we hope to keep this going.
That's great. So how are nonprofits capitalizing on this? What are they doing right? What makes for a successful push on Giving Tuesday?
I think what they are doing right is starting small and starting early. So it takes a good, you know, 8 to 12 weeks to plan for Giving Tuesday. You have to start by making sure you have a social media presence. You have to start out by asking your existing supporters to enhance your brand and, you know, say you're the Jacksonville Humane Society. Or you need to have little stories about all the pets you have adopted out. And your supporters have got to ooh and ah over the pets and retweet them and re-insta them and get them out into the community amongst their networks. And then on Giving Tuesday, you want to have an ask and say, hey, it's Giving Tuesday. The DuPont Fund is matching funds. Mm-hmm. Please give any small amount. Please retweet. Please repost. All of these factors play into it. You can't just start out on Giving Tuesday and say, hey, I think I'm going to raise money today.
Right. You can't parachute in at the last minute. That's true of a lot of things, actually. Well, so coming out of this pandemic, how do you see the future of giving?
I think the future of giving is increasingly online. The future of giving isn't perhaps necessarily to nonprofits. I think we saw in the unrest that started in 2020 over Black Lives Matter and, you know, young people setting off to different cities to protest, other young people were supporting them directly. They were sending them little $20 Phillips on their Venmo accounts. So when that is what is happening, you cannot hope to reach young donors as a nonprofit if you are not doing this all online. It is not going to be the kinds of people who are sending $20 Venmo payments to fellow protesters aren't necessarily going to be the people who show up for your fundraising gala. And you need to be serving all these different donor communities effectively going forward.
That's so smart. Yeah. Including, as you said, younger donors, donors of color, a much more diverse population than people who come out to a gala. So,
yes.
Okay. So lots of nonprofit heads listening here and lots of people who want to make their dollars work for the community. How can people make the biggest impact here on the First Coast on Giving Tuesday?
Okay. So you should probably set a budget of how much you want to give on Giving Tuesday, which is tomorrow. And, oh, actually, it's on today. And you want to make sure that you have researched the causes that matter and research and verify that the nonprofits you have picked are doing the work that you think they're doing. See if there are any matches going on, like the match from the DuPont Fund. And I understand that Florida Blue will be also doing matches. So, and WJCT, I think, does matches as well. So make sure you're taking advantage of all those matches. Give, retweet, pay attention to what other people are doing. And maybe longer run, you can set yourself a budget for the whole year so that it's not just your budget for Giving Tuesday. Your personal tithe, right? That's what people used to do in churches and temples and synagogue. You tithed and said, well, I'm going to give one-tenth of my overall earnings to charity. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could make this giving a habit, not just for Giving Tuesday?
I love that. Thanks for sharing your amazing insights on this Giving Tuesday. Mari Qureshi, she's president of the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Now, as you heard from that conversation, your Giving Tuesday dollars have local impact right here at WJCT. For more on that, I spoke with our CEO, David McGowan.
So let's continue the conversation now about Giving Tuesday and what it means for us here at WJCT Public Media. Of course, we're a nonprofit too. Our CEO, David McGowan, joins us. Hey, David.
Hey, Melissa. Great to be with you this morning on this Giving Tuesday.
That's right. And it is a global movement, but let's talk about the local impact of your giving, particularly with regard to how it helps us here at WJCT.
Well, as you say, Melissa, we are really heavily dependent on support from our community. It's our biggest single revenue stream. And, you know, as we come out of this Thanksgiving holiday and Black Friday and Cyber Monday, right, it's a great opportunity, as you've just heard from Mari, when the founders of Giving Tuesday thought 9 years ago about this, they thought, well, it would be great if we could remind everyone about what community is all about on a day. And that's really what this day is about. And that's what we're about. So we'd like, of course, for all of your listeners to consider making a gift to WJCT on Giving Tuesday, because I think a lot of people don't always think about all of the things that WJCT Public Media does here in the community outside of the programs that you may be listening to on radio or on television. And, you know, this time of year is a time when a lot of that activity is actually quite visible in the community. We have Be My Neighbor Day coming right up on Saturday, which is an event that we run for families. We expect thousands of people to visit us right here at 100 Festival Park Avenue in Jacksonville to experience all that being a neighbor really means. And that's a service that we perform every year. We're in the middle right now of collecting garments and blankets and other material for people who are without homes in our community. And we do that using our broadcasting resources in partnership with some great partners that help us do that. But we're going to be giving out those materials in about a week.
The Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive.
So there's a ton of things that this organization does day in and day out to make this community better. And so what Giving Tuesday is all about for us is asking people to take a moment in the wake of this kind of holiday period and just think about how you might make the community better by giving some support to WJCT.
That's right. As you said, our supporters are the lifeblood of this organization, and there are so many people listening right now who've been longtime supporters of WJCT. And there are plenty listening that maybe they've just started listening recently and they've never donated. Well, it's easy to do. You just go to WJCT.org and find that donate button. But, you know, in addition to all of the philanthropic work we do here and the content that you love on the radio, and also, of course, what we air at Jax PBS on television every day, we have a pretty robust digital news operation too, and that's only growing with the advent of our new vertical, Jacksonville Today, which is really exciting, and we've gotten a lot of interest in that as well, because as you talk about all of the time, David, the business model for nonprofit news is really vital to local communities, and we are working really hard to strengthen that here in Jacksonville. It means a lot to the civic health of this metropolitan area.
It does. It does mean a lot to the civic health of our democracy right here in Jacksonville. And of course, Melissa, what you do each and every day on this program on the air is vital to that, right? Bringing politicians, arts leaders, the whole community here with a chance for your listeners to participate in that conversation, mm-hmm. which is another really important part of what we bring to the table as a community-led, a community-owned broadcasting institution. Mm-hmm. So we're really delighted to, of course, participate in this day, along with many other nonprofits. There are many worthy causes that deserve your support. But this is a great institution. In just 9 years, that Giving Tuesday has become something that, mm-hmm. again, allows us to think about not only how to fill those stockings, but how to make our communities better. And so we're grateful mm-hmm. to participate in that.
That's right. Again, on this Giving Tuesday, if you're a regular listener or viewer or a reader of news on our website, or you've maybe been to one of our events and enjoyed that, make an end of the year gift to WJCT. Just go to WJCT.org. David McGowan, always good to talk to you. Thanks. Again, just go to WJCT.org/Giving Tuesday and donate to us, your favorite source of nonprofit news on the First Coast, here on this Giving Tuesday. We're not doing a pledge drive per se today, but you can call in your donation if you like to do it that way. Give us a call at 353-9528 and call in the donation over the phone. You can also send us a check if you like to do things the old-fashioned way on Giving Tuesday. Send it to 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. Again, as we've been talking about this morning, our community of supporters is our lifeblood, and I just want to take a moment to say thanks to all of you out there who listen, who volunteer. Yes, we have some incredible volunteers, and who donate to keep nonprofit news going strong here on the First Coast, along with all of the community events that we host and are starting to do very carefully once again here at WJCT. Again, WJCT.org/Giving Tuesday. Make the donation today or just give us a call. The number is 353-9528. And thanks so much. Okay, a quick break, and in a moment, I'm excited about this one. Ancient plant-based cuisine, now presented in a brand new way. We'll step inside Haka Kitchen near the Intercoastal Waterway in our dining series and find out what's cooking as we speak with owner Wen Ray T. That's next. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
The Jesse Ball DuPont Fund reminds you that Giving Tuesday is November 30th. Join this worldwide movement by giving time, money, or your voice to the nonprofits you love. More at DuPontFund.org/Giving Tuesday. Let's give, Jacksonville.
Farrah & Farrah, dedicated to representing the injured people in Jacksonville for over 40 years. Learn more at farrahandfarrah.com or 396-5555. Farrah & Farrah's accident attorneys are here for you, here for good.
I'm Ian Martinez from NPR. Giving Tuesday is all about generosity. Everyone has something to give, but you know, it's okay to give for yourself. When you donate, it makes you feel good. So even if your reasons for giving to this station aren't purely selfless, who cares? Give yourself a little pick-me-up while giving to this station. Here's how.
Visit wjct.org/givingtuesday.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. As part of our series exploring where the U.S. gets its electricity, we'll take a closer look at nuclear power. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm supports it.
We have the technology and the policy solutions to sustainably develop zero-carbon nuclear energy.
But is it safe? And is nuclear ready to grow? That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Across the world, countries rush to impose travel bans as scientists grapple with a new variant. And Moderna says if we need a new vaccine, developing one could take months.
If we have to make a brand new vaccine, I think that's going to be early 2022 before that's really going to be available in large quantities.
Omicron, the latest next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, we're continuing our occasional dining series here on the show as we drop in on a new place where they specialize in an ancient cuisine made new. Owner Wen Reiti told me more about her new Hakka Kitchen on Beach Boulevard near the Intercoastal Waterway. Take a listen.
Hi, Wen. It's so good to talk to you. So tell us all about the new Hakka Kitchen.
Yes. How many minutes are you going to give it to me?
10 minutes.
So, as you know, House Leaf and Bean was more like a cafe style, fast casual dining concept. And we also have a few the menu items are based on the Hakka tradition. And then there are also very popular menu items. So when we have a new chef coming on board, the executive chef, Marshall Zinn, he suggested that we should broaden our audience so that our food can reach more people. We started discuss this kind of concept for since July. And we just keep exploring different dining concepts and different type of dishes. So after a few months, we said, well, our most popular dishes is Hakka dishes. Why can't we just make it all Hakka dishes? So Hakka is a part of my heritage. It's a one ethnicity in China, originally from Northwest China. It's a one type of a Han Chinese early tribe. They migrated to different part of China and then the rest of the world through 1,500 years migration. So in during all this migration, they maintained their culture, maintained their language. So now they Hakka people speak very different type of language. Their cuisine also changed throughout the migration, adapting to the local and then the environment. So that's why our dishes sound like, looks like international, but actually it's a very unique Hakka people's dishes. Mm-hmm.
So when we come to eat at Hakka Kitchen, tell us about some of the delicious entrees we'll be enjoying.
All right. Two things in my mind right away. I would say dumplings. And the baozi is a steamed bun that is, has been really popular since we opened 2 days. Everybody wanted to try. Mm-hmm. The entree, I will always recommend the curry tofu and the eggplant steak.
I can't wait to try the new menu because I eat mostly vegan these days. So I'm always so looking happy. For restaurants too where I can eat the way I want to eat. And you are so high on the list. You came to this for health reasons yourself, didn't you?
Right. Yes, and actually both me, myself, and Chef Marshall came to this lifestyle because of health. And if you get the chance in the future, you can talk to Chef Marshall over his transformation in diet as a executive chef for many years, cooking meat all his life. But now he's totally in as a plant-based diet.
Yeah, plant-based.
And he's really excited to making all delicious plant-based meals.
That's the thing, like, you can have the most delicious foods eating plant-based, which you prove every day when.
Correct, exactly. That's what we are trying to do, trying to change minds. That all those people out there think that plant-based meals are boring, not tasting. We're going to change their minds and tell them that it's not true. You can eat very delicious, very satisfying plant-based meals in Hakka Kitchen.
Well, I can't wait to visit. Of course, I visited when it was House of Leaf and Bean. Now it is reborn as Hakka Kitchen. Find this amazing place at the corner of Beach and San Pablo. Plant-based Chinese countryside cuisine inspired by the Hakka people. Chef and owner Wen Rady, thank you, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you.
That will be a delicious place to visit. Okay, one more mention of Giving Tuesday as our station manager, David Luckin, drops by. Hey, David.
Hey, Melissa. This is the day where we hope we're at the top of your giving list, but
that's
we don't want you to short anybody else because this is an important day for lots of nonprofits and charities in town. So if you can give to us and all your other favorite nonprofits, we encourage that by visiting wjct.org/givingtuesday, or you can, of course, always call us at 353-9528. And whether it's $1 or $1,000, it all goes to all the great programming you come to expect from us.
That's right. So go to wjct.org/givingtuesday or call us up at 353-9528. It's amazing how Giving Tuesday has taken off.
Sure is. And it's a good thing for all the nonprofits because they struggle a lot more than the for-profit businesses sometimes. So we encourage you to give to all your favorite nonprofits, including us.
Yeah, consider us in your end of year giving. Get that tax deduction. Get it in before the end of the year. WJCT.org/Giving Tuesday or 353-9528. Make David happy. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Giving Tuesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.